baby, I like it raw. Yeah, baby, I like it raw. Ooh, baby, I like it raw. Yeah, baby, I like it raw. Shimmy, shimmy, y'all, shimmy, yam, shimmy, yeah. Give me the mic so I can take it away. Off on a natural charge, bon voyage. Yeah, from the home of the Dodgers, Brooklyn squad. Wu-Tang killer, he's on the swarm. Rain on your college ass disco dorm. For you to even touch my skill, you gotta go to one killer B.
And as promised, I am here alone. Another rambling podcast. I think it's the third. I don't know. And Twilight Lights history. It's becoming more of a trend. I've said many apologies to a lot of people listen to Two White Lights, Steve, Solana, of, you know, my this infrequency on the show. I'm sure it's been said it many times, but yeah, schedule's been very busy, you know, with work, powerlifting, coaching powerlifting on the high school level. Schedule's been busy, and it's been a long time since I've been able to speak on Two White Lights, and as a result, you get some ramblings. Looks like my schedule might clear up a bit for some future episodes that we're going to have, so I'm excited for that. But yeah, kind of taking this episode, this rambling, to talk about, one, some changes that I've made in my coaching, and kind of to recap some things for Powerlifting American Nationals, because usually you do a coach-client confidential with Joe Stanek, but I have recently moved on from getting coaching from Joe. And this episode I was planning on doing regardless, just because I think this happens in powerlifting a lot, where people switch coaches and there's not a huge explanation on why. If there is, I miss a lot of it, but high-level, elite-level lifters do leave their coaches, and most of the time, it's not drama-packed, it's not drama-filled, and it's just a change of perspective, meshing with a different person, and yeah, this is kind of a no-different scenario. Now, I was expecting people to ask questions, and also, it's a tacky move to, like, you know, make a story post on Instagram and formally announce that you're leaving a coach and then getting another coach, or that you're a free agent and you're taking on interviews. So I'm like, okay, when I get a new coach, I'm just going to do the thing that I always do when I get a program, and that's posted on my story. And then also, like, if you do a post and then tag your new coach, you know, especially with, you know, Instagram, and, you know, some recent events that's taken place, like, the comment section is just going to go wild, and you might just get people arguing with one another and everyone looking for, you know, the gossip behind it, something they can send in group chat, something they can sit around and talk about for, like, 2 days, and then they move on to something else, like, you know, another story post or another announcement, or the USPA did something, WRI, like, federational drama. You know, the USAPL makes a post about the Arnold Pro Finals that happened a month ago. One of those things that people can just divert their attention to and make fun of. And I'm not saying people would make fun of this, but yeah, people would ask questions. But the funniest thing is, you know, I made a story post getting a sheet from John Song, who is my new coach, and made a couple posts. And then I did a Q&A today, and then still, like, I would get DMs like, wait, is John Song your coach? Is John Song your coach? Are you getting new coaching now? Did you switch coaches? And that has been, like, 45 questions. And then I see, like, all the shares, and there's a lot of shares of just me announcing that I'm getting a new coach, and I'm wondering how many people are just saying or asking, did Angel get a new coach? Like, That was the funniest part to me, because I thought there'd be way more questions. Like, what was the process? Why did you switch coaches? And I think one person asked that, and it shows you a lot. Like, people don't really care why. They just, I mean, I guess they do care why, but it's like, if you don't give them the answer that they want, then it's like, ah, okay. That was, and like I said, I was going to do this episode because I think it offers an interesting perspective on a coach getting, or an athlete getting another coach, or vice versa, right? Like, not working with an athlete. And it is not something that's unfamiliar in powerlifting. So, yes, I decided to no longer get coaching from Joe. And when you really take a look at just what him and I were able to accomplish, it's a complete, astounding success. Like, there's no other way to look at it, in, at least in my eyes, as a success, because I think people get so intertwined with what, you know, they should be doing right now, what their goal currently is. They never remember how they started or what the initial conversations were when they were just setting their goals up. And, you know, I always talk about time machines. Like, you know, put yourself in a time machine, take yourself back to 2019. That's what I did. And, like, the conversation I had with Joe is I want to be, you know, an American deadlift or a American record deadlift holder. That made no sense. I wanted to hold the American record deadlift that you set. I wanted to break that. I wanted to be in the conversation with elite 83 kilo lifters. I want a podium at nationals. I want to continue to progress in the sport. And we accomplished all that in a very short period of time. It's been 5 years, but if I look back at 2019, would there have been a conversation of, you know, you're going to podium at every nationals, and now it's the only thing for you to do is to win nationals, which I have done, and make it on the world scene, which I have not done. And that's really the only thing, is make it to worlds and win worlds. That's the only thing we haven't been able to do. But, you know, was that a conversation we were even having? We're talking about beating some big names and moving up the rankings and getting a podium position and all that stuff. But, you know, if you take it 5 years later and, like, you're going to be in that conversation, you know, you're going to be striving for that. That's going to be your next goal. I would have bought it 100 times out of 100. Like, there's no question. It's the relationship I've had with Joe has been a complete success. He's taken me from that fringe level national competitor that was more known for, like, being a meme, you know, having this podcast, and like the stupid stuff too, like, you know, bleeding shins and the guy who does a chalk clap and the weird bench dismount and the stupid sumo stance with the heeled shoes. That was what I was known for. And it's so good to be known for something else. And that, you know, a large part has been due to Joe and what he's been able to do. He's taught me a lot. I learned a lot from him. We had tons of success. Broke the American deadlift record about 5 times. Podiumed at nationals every single year after 2019. Won nationals in a huge, you know, big comeback. And competed in some big meets. And all those things is just evidence of success, and I'm very proud of. But, you know, things change. And you take a look at some of the training that I've had, I see some stagnation. And currently with the landscape of the sport, you can't really have stagnation, especially when your goal is the ultimate goal, which is to make it onto the world's team and win worlds and be the best in the world. You can't have stagnation. The sport is getting better. The sport is getting younger, and the guy on top is continuously progressing his total. That's a lot. That's a lot to deal with, and stagnation just isn't going to cut it. Some people can be stagnant, right? Like, if they're at the top of their weight class, they can hit the same total repeatedly, and they'll be good. I'm not one of those guys. Very few of those guys exist. I would love to be one of those guys one day, but those guys don't exist, and I'm only getting older. You know, I'm 31 years old. Been competing for almost a decade, so it's been 8 years since I've been competing, and progress has to be made, and this was a possibility. Really, after the Arnold Pro Finals, where I was kind of looking and seeing I wasn't PRing a lot of my lifts, and training wasn't going fantastic, and we're dealing with a lot of injuries, and we all had to call outside help, and I think actually the coaching I was getting was, I call it overcoaching, where our relationship became so good where you started to tinker with a lot because we both really wanted to accomplish the goal. And I think that turned into something of coach wanting to have me have success, wanting to help me have success, working really hard on that. And then me wondering, okay, why are we making this change now? Is it too quick? Is it too far into the competition? Or is it too far into prep? Is it too close to competition? Why are we making this change? you know, it, because we failed one lift, should we be making this change? And I had a lot more feedback and giving a little bit more pushback, and the coach is trying to help me get better. And I think that's because 5 years have passed and we've used so many options. We've expended a lot of our resources, and maybe it's just time for a different perspective. And that's what I was thinking for a bit. We had some success that almost clouded just the some of the stagnation I was having. So this was, you know, the opportunity to really look at things. And you know, the conversation I had with Joe, it was somewhat, you know, bought up in a way at Reno. We hung out after the meet for a long period of time. And, you know, we had conversations, and within those conversations, I'm like, just maybe I need a new perspective. He's having really good success with his lifters currently. You know, Perk is going off. You have Bam as well. And Charlie Yang, you know, had a fantastic performance there. It's like, okay, at that point, it's working for them, right? And they're somewhat newer to the coaching, and, you know, potentially it's just time for me to, like I said, get a new perspective on things. And we had a conversation, and the part of it sucks is he is a friend, and we've, and 5 years, every single day of you talking to someone and getting feedback from someone, then also, you know, just hanging out with that person, becoming friends with that. Yeah, it's a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing to just be like, hey, I'm moving on. But, you know, there wasn't, it wasn't a story that people can take and like, oh, did you hear the, you hear the whole Joe Stanek, Angelo Fortino thing? There was no blow up. It was a pretty mutual parting of ways. He suggested coaches. I had coaches in mind, and yeah, we've still, you know, spoken since then. Like we're good. I don't think, and also no one has been asking me the questions of if we're good or not. It's the brunt of the questions have been, are you still getting coached by Joe, and did you switch coaches? And that is the main subject. So if anything, this podcast is going to explicitly state that, yeah, I'm getting a new coach. And, you know, I figured after Nationals, that's what's going to happen. If I didn't see any progress, and the week was interesting, because, you know, you get to decide who you want as a coach, and that offered up some options for me. Joe recommended some people. I, of course, asked Steve, and, you know, I think some people may ask, and no one has yet, but Steve is kind of taken off the table because he is one of my best friends, and we do Two White Lights together, and he's carried Two White Lights for a couple of months now, actually really for this entire 24, him and Solana, and it's like, no, well, you know, he's off the option. Obviously, I respect the hell out of him as a coach. He is a fantastic coach. He's a fantastic guy. I would love getting coaching from him at some, like, or not at some point. But yes, if we weren't friends, I would consider him within the conversation of coaches to get. You know, Marcellus is another name that, you know, was kind of tossed around, but he has way too many 83s on his roster, and also we're very close friends. I would qualify Brad Couillard within the same conversation of guy I respect as a coach. I think he's a fantastic coach. Just we're really close friends, and I think a little bit of separation is good. When looking for a coach, like, I don't want someone to be a robot. I do want to be able to joke with them on a personal level and get to know them someone on a personal level. But a little bit of distance is actually good. And the names that came up, John Song was the definite number one choice. He was the number one choice going into it. You know, even if Steve, Marcellus, and Brad were not you know, consider it into the equation, he would definitely be there because we've worked together in the past and he's done fantastic things with me when I was unhealthy, when I was injured. A huge part of that Memphis prep was because, you know, he gave me fantastic advice, did some programming changes here and there, gave some advice to Joe and I, gave me some movements. We gave him a ton of credit on the podcast, after Nationals, the Coach Client Confidential. We gave him a ton of credit at the Arnold when I first worked with him in the Grand Prix. Like, that was some problems too with my hip, and he was really able to help me out with that. And I PR'd my squat both times that I was with John. And, you know, what can he do when I'm healthy? And I I like how he communicates. I like all those, you know, those traits about him. And already, like, we're just having these conversations and things are clicking. It's just the information is being given to you in a different way. So he was bought up, but then also some options I had was Matt Cronin. I think I brought up on the podcast before that Matt Cronin has always been a coach who I've really loved. And in 2019, I might have strongly considered him if he wasn't a highly ranked 83-kilo lifter. I wasn't comfortable with getting any coach who was in the my weight class and then also who was better than me or, you know, slightly worse than me. You know, if we go down into the rankings, I wasn't going to get coaching from them. And, you know, 5 years later, things have changed. And, oh, like, personality-wise, yes. Like, Matt and I really, really meshed well. And then also, I respect the hell out of him as a coach. A lot of stuff prior to me even getting coaching, I watched the Matt Cronin stuff, and he was able to articulate things to a thing I was, or in a way I was able to understand, which is a very difficult thing to do at times. And he was a big coaching candidate right off the jump. Sean Collins was another one that was bought up, but wasn't able to have an interview. Looks like his roster is full. But he was another guy that was suggested, but also I've had a tremendous respect for. And another one that Steve recommended, and when he recommended, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's actually a really good option, is David Wilson. And David Wilson, I've watched a lot of his stuff on YouTube, and another one of those personalities, having a conversation with him, we really meshed. I love just having a conversation with him. And of all this, like the whole interview process thing, it took about 3 days. If anything, it was just good to have these conversations with these guys because I don't really get this opportunity very often. But this situation allowed me to do that, and it was just some very good, enjoyable powerlifting conversational talk about programming, how to communicate cues, and, you know, getting feedback kind of just in the moment, and then them giving feedback to me. And my first interview process wasn't really like that. And it was a harder choice after the interviews because I was really leaning heavily towards John. But after that, you know, you just like talking to the guys so much that, you know, you find some ways like, yeah, this guy, based on what he's saying to me, can get me to that level and can have success with me. I'm full confidence that they could do a fantastic job as well. But really, you know, with John working with me in the past and us having a good understanding of each other, he was a choice. And yeah, I'm excited to work with him. It does also offer some increased motivation. You have a new coach. I know when I got Joe, like just getting in the gym was almost like a whole new experience and very similar to getting coaching for John. It just feels like a whole new experience is getting in the gym and doing some of the things that he's suggesting. You know, it's going to sound stupid, but a different program layout. I know that's dumb, but that's something that's kind of cool. It's just kind of cool to see, and you find another way to get motivated. I love going into the gym regardless, but that's just adding to it, right? Like where I can't legitimately wait to go in the gym. I've been taking some morning sessions recently, so that's going to help, and lifting with the team, so I don't really have to think that long session to session. You know, I have work, come home, sleep, and then bam, I'm in the gym again, and then I get to do the process over. So, yeah, going to be working with John from now on. Joe and I have had tremendous success, and I brought this up to Joe and some other people. I heard this regurgitated from someone else, so it could be wrong, and it could possibly never have been said, and I'm too lazy to look it up. But Phil Jackson once said something along the lines of, you get like 5 years with an organization as a coach and with a group of players, and if you're a good coach and you have a good group of coachable players, it's going to work for about 5 years. But then there's going to be a point where the communication isn't going to be there. And they're either not going to buy into what you're saying, or you're going to need new players to help what to do what you want to get done. So you get some new players. You keep some of your players. You get some new players. And it doesn't mean those are bad players. And it doesn't mean those are bad coaches. It just means that they can have success somewhere else on another system. And I could have success with another player who buys into the system. And that does somewhat relate to powerlifting, right? It's a different sport. Phil Jackson is, you know, the best NBA coach, arguably the best coach in any sport of all time. Arguments can be made. And he's applying that to a team sport, but in powerlifting, you get a ton of clients. You get a ton of athletes who are at different points of their career. You could have a high school athlete, and you could have a master's athlete. That's how big the range is. And at points, sometimes it's just you're going to mesh well with different groups of people. You're going to have more success with different groups of people. And at first, clearly, Joe was the guy. Joe was the perfect guy for me. We've had, like I said, tons of success, immediate success, huge success that I thought I'd never be able to touch in my career. And 5 years later, I could acknowledge that he's been trying really hard to get me to a point where I want to be. But something isn't clicking. And at that point, it's nothing that he's doing per se. He's working hard. I'm just, it could be me. It could be me not giving the feedback. It could be me not being educated enough in powerlifting. Like I've recently started coaching myself and very, very bare minimal stuff. Gonna really rely heavily on just learning on the fly, powerlifting now. But, you know, if I had more knowledge of programming and, movement patterns, then maybe I could give more feedback to Joe. So, you know, I'm a good lifter. He's a good coach. And he's going to have success as a coach. I'm going to have success as a lifter. Knock on wood, hopefully. And, a new coach can possibly get me there. A new client could possibly get him there. And, yeah, that's kind of how I'm viewing that. And then, you know, transition here into Powerlifting America Nationals and a recap. Sometimes we do it during the preview show. Sometimes we may gloss over it depending on how busy we are. Currently, I'm not busy as far as what I'm doing right now and I'm not able to make a ton of like recap shows or all that stuff. So, you know, Powerlifting America, prep was okay. Going into the meets and I wasn't going to be on the preview shows or anything, I knew that Russ had to miss lifts in order for me to win. And whenever I say that, I think I said on the show before, you pretty much put yourself at a 95% chance to lose. If you're being nice, 90%. But once you say that, and all the preview shows, the King of Lifts, Future of Powerlifting, they were right. You know, I probably had a 95% to 98% chance of losing this. And you still compete, right? Because they might miss some lifts. You show up, you play the game, you don't run from competition because you're not 110% to compete. You go there and you do it, but also there's competition there regardless. Chris Perez is a fantastic competitor. I knew he was always, he's been neck and neck for me since 2022, I want to say. I think I said on the Arnold preview show that if I had a bad day, Chris is a good enough lifter to beat me. And I actually had a halfway decent day, and he beat me. So he's a competitor. And also, I was under the impression that Gruden was going to compete as well. That's a big rivalry that I've always loved competing against Gruden. And we've had some fantastic battles. I think he had to drop out because of an injury. So hoping he, you know, gets back onto the platform and competes at the next one because I would love competing against him. But there's competition there, and that's why you show up. And I was put in a position to potentially get second and also PR my total. And, you know, this is where the stagnation kind of hits. Squat was decent in prep. I do think I was a little close on a couple of my squats. Bench was not great in prep, but great on meet day. And I guess it's the worst recap of all time. But if I can get those bench commands for the rest of my powerlifting career, I'm benching 400 pounds. That's not going to happen. But, yeah, they were some quick press commands. And we actually had to play a conservative because I was missing, like, 172. like a couple weeks out, and this is where the tinkering started happening. We were changing a lot, and I just felt completely lost on bench. So I'm like, we got to do conservative because if I miss two benches, we're done. If I miss a squat, we're done. Like, I got to get to deadlifts. And, you know, those press commands were money. You know what? I'm going to say that's how press commands should always be. They were fast. And, yeah, I guess I can restart and do, like, a recap from the beginning here. But, you know, going into the meets, I knew I was going to have my hands full. I knew we needed some, you know, missed lifts. And on the day, not going to lie, I was nervous. That was probably the most nervous I was for a meet. It didn't affect my performance at all because I hit the number that I was kind of expecting on bench. I was expecting about 305, and I did 302.5. And I was nervous before squat because that was one of the only meets where I'm like, what if I bomb out of this one? Because I'm looking at squat training, and I'm like, I think my squats are a little bit high, and we're in a different federation. You know, I've been getting a lot of two white lights lift, and you can joke and say it's an ad read. And you know what? I could lie and say it's an ad read, but I would rather get some three white light lifts. We can save two white light lifts for like a last deadlift that doesn't get overturned. That's the perfect one. I don't love constantly getting two white lights lift, and it's been a common trend recently. So I was really nervous on my squats. And that third squat was a grinder. I did feel something tweak in my back. I was playing it off. It didn't affect me in the competition at all. I actually, you know, ibuprofen and a lot of Icy Hot really helped, or whatever it was. It was like that Aleve cooling. I don't know what it was, but that helped. And I felt fine for bench and deadlift. So it really didn't play. I was scared in the moment, though, because it was a familiar feeling of my movement is going to be limited. It's going to be good in 24 hours, but luckily, we were good. That's why I did the old man walk. And also, I'm getting old. And yeah, that face that I made was like, yeah, that was a close one. And, you know, I was iffy on the depth there as well. Bench, I kind of calmed down during bench because I knew 165 was pretty much a guarantee. And I was going to take 3 for 3 and walk away with it. I was happy after bench because 167 is the first time I've hit 167 in competition. I think if you look, I am 0-for-3 into that competition and 3-for-4 with 170. Very strange stat. So I'm now 1-for-4 with 167.5, you know, barring I get that nice press command. And, yeah, bench is good. And then on deadlifts, it was very strange. Felt good in warm-ups, didn't feel good on the platform. And this is something of the tweaks and changes that were made, and this is just some discomfort I've been having on deadlifts for a while. I just haven't felt locked in and grooved into my deadlifts, and some days is good, some days is bad. It's, you know, what's the Gattuso thing? Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're shit. And yeah, it's been a common trend with my deadlifts, and that's my money lift, so that can't continue to happen. And it happened throughout prep where, you know, I hit 782, and that moved nicely. You know, 800 was a near miss. I wasn't too upset with the miss because it was up and down as opposed to absolute strength, and it was better than the last time I attempted 800 where I think I got it to my knee, and that was it. I just dropped it from there because I just did not have anywhere close to the strength. So, you know, that was the only good day, though, with deadlifts. And, you know, warm-ups felt great on the platform. 727 felt weird. I felt like my hand was opening up. I almost missed the lift, and we still kept the plan the way it was. Didn't change anything. It was a better lift, but I wasn't a huge fan of how it moved in my second attempt. And my third one, I'm like, all right, well, whatever happens, happens. I was so far, like, I knew that Russ got his third squat overturned. I'm like, wait, what if Russ misses his last deadlift? And Joe's like, yeah, no, we're not going to be able to hit anything. I'm like, all right, well, let's go for second. We can still PR the total and have a very good PR on the total. And that's on me. I didn't execute the lift. I knew kind of off the floor I was missing it. It just, you know, the second attempt kind of told me that deadlifts isn't quite there. And, yeah, it just, you know, right off the floor, I knew I was going to miss. You know, I couldn't exactly lock out. It looked much closer than it was. It was the same thing as the Arnold. Where at the Arnold, though, at the Pro Finals, I thought it was definitely going to be locked out as soon as it left the floor. This meet, as soon as it left the floor, I'm like, yeah, this is probably not going to get locked out. You know, still tried, you know, gave everything I got as far as, you know, it's when the pec starts to hurt. That's when I know I'm really trying to lock out a deadlift. And my 787 at Nationals, 771 at Virginia Pro, I didn't feel that. So that's how you know it wasn't technically locked in. And, yeah, I think I was technically sloppy on deadlifts all day. And you can say that about squat as well. So, you know, that's, I guess, the recap of Powerlifting America Nationals. You got to give credit to Russ. If I was my best performance ever by far, wouldn't have beat him on that day. He's the best, and he continues to prove it. The goal is to work to that, and you have a new goal. It's now 860. You know, it's not easy. You got to assume now Russ is going to hit 860 at every meet he's going to do. Worlds might be different, but really doesn't matter. And then on top of that, you have Delaney, which was the total we were chasing. But now you have Chris, and Chris has been in the conversation. We were neck and neck at Nationals as well. That was an incredibly close battle. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, you gotta give tons of credit to. He was definitely the better lifter. He's just in the conversation of elite 83-kilo lifters. And I know his goal is to also be the best in the world too. So he's another competitor thrown into the mix, and I know a ton of guys are moving over. Joe Bornstein is one of the big ones. I mean, that dude is doing crazy things at 74, 75 kilos, and he's just going to be a stud at 83. So, you know, he's not thinking 827. You know, he's not thinking 820. He already told 820. He's thinking 860, right? And Noriega is thinking 860. And Lucky, if he moves over, is thinking 860. Everyone is thinking that number now. So it's almost nice because it's just going to turn into another Shark Tank that I love to compete in. And that was the only thing missing from Powerlifting America Nationals was the Shark Tank of competitors. It was cool competing against Chris and Russ, like it always is, but it's always good competing against like six guys who can possibly beat you. The rush there is awesome. So yeah, I guess that's a brief Powerlifting America recap. And you know, some other updates as well. Was able to coach in my first powerlifting meet, high school meet. That was awesome. I wasn't really coaching officially because I had to coach in the stands, so some Article 14 coaching. And I don't know why this even exists anymore, because I'm like, who isn't an Article 14 violation anymore? I don't know. I'm not, because I was in the stands, but you know, with Powerlifting America Nationals, I was confused. I'm like, okay, this is something's got to give here, because this is just ridiculous at this point. But yeah, I had my high schoolers compete. That's been a cool development. And, you know, an incredibly busy week leading up to Nationals. Luckily, it was spring break, so I really got to, like, hit sleep for that week. And not going to lie, I felt great physically on the day. But this is truly a ramble at this point. So this is my cue, and we're over 30 minutes. And once I start getting over 30 minutes, we start talking about, like, I don't know, the JFK assassination, if the moon landing was real or not, LeBron MJ, even though I don't care about the debate. But that's what happens when I start rambling over 30 minutes. Hopefully I'm not missing anything, but that's a little Powerlifting America recap. That's some updates, but also the big subject here. Was me getting coaching now from John Song, and no longer getting coaching from Joe Stanek. So the coaching change is the big takeaway here. So thank you guys for listening to the rambling. I always appreciate it. Make sure you subscribe to Two White Lights on Apple Podcasts. Leave a 5-star rating or review there. Subscribe on Spotify. Leave a 5-star rating. And also go to twowhitelights.com. Get yourself some merchandise. Use some codes and subscribe to Two White Lights there as well. I'll see you guys very soon. Peace.